cooperation with the United States government, the Owens, Illinois Glass Company, developers of Duraglass containers, present another program with Mrs. America's favorite radio visitor, Fletcher Wiley. The health and safety of our fighting men are protected by the many tubes for X-ray and radio. Technical glass required for X-ray and some of the tubes must be hand-blown. The highly skilled workers of Owens, Illinois and its affiliates are doing that job. Well, to start off the new week, we have Wilbur Hatch and his orchestra, the tenor voice of Phil Regan, a little duo singing by Diana Gale and Phil Hanna. And here's your home front reporter, Fletcher Wiley, who feels that the American cow is a more useful member of society than the armchair generals, because the cow makes the same kind of mooing noises, but gives milk besides. Fletcher Wiley.
And don't smell any worse, either. Thank you, Galen. And the best of the day to all of you. Somebody a long time ago gave with one of those old trite sayings that we all pick up and use about being an ill wind that blows nobody any good. And I think that that applies to a lot of commentators about this war down the Mediterranean area. But it's kind of a cradle of civilization down there. It's been there a long time. There's a lot of history and a lot of mythology and folklore that we heard of at one time or another, and most of us have forgotten. And when the news of the fighting is vague or reserved, why, anybody that's got to talk into one of these things gets down the 5-foot shelf for the Encyclopedia, the World Almanac, or calls up a friend and finds out some Roman legend or a slice of ancient history that makes good background. And they've got nothing on me. That's just what I'm doing right now. I'm just wondering what with Sardinia in the news headlines. I'm wondering if you can figure out a name that sounds like the Quiz Kids, if you can figure out a name that owes its derivation to Sardinia. And none of you subway riders need speak up and say sardine, because I'm not talking about that either. They used to have a great custom down there in Sardinia a long, long time ago. Up until we started to become aware of the fact that it should be against the law to starve to death and that people in their old age were entitled to some consideration, old people were always a tremendous problem. And the funny part about that is that old people always feel that they're a tremendous problem, which increases their problem. They used to, in many sections, they used to take an old man when he got too old to work, or an old woman, take him out and tell him to look at the moon on the edge of a tall cliff and give him a gentle shove, and that solved the budget problem in that family. The problem of dispatching people who have gone beyond their years of extreme productivity is very ancient. The Nazis have renewed the ancient custom in recent years, but they haven't even confined their depopulation activities to the old folks at home. On Sardinia, when they were colonists of Carthage, there wasn't any ham and egg pension plan for the old folks to look forward to. And they couldn't even look forward to retiring to the Sardinian counterpart of Long Beach, California. And when the sons and daughters decide that Papa was too far past his prime for further usefulness, they waited till the dark of the moon, and they knocked Papa in the head with a club. Now, that's literally, and this is a fact. Some of the children kind of shrank from the task of clubbing Father on the bald spot, and these sensitive souls used to hire a professional finisher to do this job for them. There were plenty of them. You could get hold of them very easily. They were just as thick as nurses, maybe thicker. There were strong-armed boys, and there were gun mouths with a club who did this work. They had a name, which I can't pronounce. It's something like, it's either Achabaduri or Achabaduri. I could ask some of the wops in the orchestra, and they'd tell me, but I forgot to. Anyway, it came from the Spanish acopare, meaning to knock on the head. They had a scale of prices, and they doubtless had business agents. Anyway, when the time came for Papa's removal from this vale of tears, they hired one of these strong-arm boys. And because it was considered somewhat shameful to put on a long face and get red-eyed from weeping when you were having Father knocked in the head, a custom sprang up of laughing on that occasion in a forced manner when they invited Grandpa to take a walk on a dark night. And when one of the boys asked why he hadn't shown up at the 60-plus club or lately at the lodge, why, there was just a sardonic laugh given. And the term sardonic dates back to the time when the boys used to laugh in a hollow and forced manner at dispatching Grandpa. It was forced laughter, hence sardonic laughter. Maybe they'll cook it up again in Sardinia for Benito. Well, let's have a tune. Here are Hannah and Diana, who are going to do a very difficult job called Tiptoeing Through the Tulips. Country, if you can wander around very much, what with the gas shortage and stuff. Pass all kinds of houses. Little ones, big ones, up to the kind where they have a 6-car garage and a winding entrance leading up the top of a hill. First, you realize there's a lot of difference between these various homes. You could spell it out with bucks. Generally, one family has more money than the other. They live in a better street. And you sometimes wonder what it was happened to put these people living up in the hill and other people living across the tracks. It isn't a matter of character, because very frequently you find better character on the other side of the tracks than you do on the top of the hill, and vice versa. But if you look around now at homes throughout this country, you'll find that, big or little, they're strangely alike. Not in the terms of what they'd cost, but in a very human way. Regardless of what the size of the homes may be, in window after window now, you see service flags.
One star, two, sometimes three. Sometimes a gold one mixed in with the other ones. These flags are probably more truly the flags of democracy than the stars and stripes that they run up over the public buildings. Because, like our national flag, they are expressive of national aims, ideas, and solidarity. But they have an added quality, a very highly personal quality. To every family that has one of these flags in the window, and it doesn't matter what kind of a house that flag's up in, rich or poor, black or white, Jew, Gentile, whatever their belief may be, the folks in the big house and the folks in the little house that fly one of these flags can readily understand one another because they have a common purpose, a common faith, a common prayer. Which maybe they didn't have before. The guy with a lot of money that's retired, the doctor with the lush practice, and the fellow that swings a pick or works in a nice cool sewer. They're all thinking the same thoughts about their sons, feeling the same hopes, making the same prayers, and working for the same thing. The woman who has the big house in the hill and the housewife in the little one. Lives have been very different up till now. They're not so different anymore. Not in the thing that matters most to them. They're both watching that mailbox. They're both listening for the postman's whistle. When they get a letter from the kid, there's the same combined fear and uplift. They both know what it means to wait for a letter that's slow in coming. And they're writing the same kind of letters. Family news, pictures of the relatives, and a little bit of local gossip, and maybe a snapshot. Clipping from the local paper, or a cartoon, or joke that'll be good for a chuckle with the boys. They're both making the favorite kind of cookies. And they're both smiling with maybe an occasional teardrop as they do it. Both these women now know what it means when the kid gets home on leave. Very precious hours and very short ones. And when they see some other boy go up to some other woman's door, or walking with his mother, or his sweetheart, or his sister, or his wife, they're glad for her. It creates a closer bond. They know how she feels, how the boy feels. It's the next best thing to having your own kid come home. Practically all of them, the mothers and the wives and the sisters and sweethearts of these men, are meeting together now on a plane that they've never met before. Clothes and what you've got don't mean so much difference. You can't use your car anyway. If you're serving in the Red Cross, you find out that those are nice people, too. Some of the silly barriers of social rating go down. And democracy, some way or other, becomes more alive. That's a good thing. The donation that the millionaire makes to the blood bank, the one made by a guy that never saw a butler except in the movies, they both save a life equally well. They all carry pictures of the kid and talk about the fact that he got his corporal's stripes. They're proud of him, and they listen and understand when the other fellow does the same thing. This common understanding, this unanimity of purpose, it isn't the stars and stripes. The national flag, beautiful as that flag is, and as much as we revere it for everything that it symbolizes, it isn't that flag that's done it. It's that service flag. Service flag in the window. Those people don't have to be told there's a war on. They know. They aren't theorizing about democracy. They're living it. And they're fighting to keep it because they're fighting alongside of that boy. They may not, or they may, understand or subscribe to world courts and this or that vast world war plan, but they do understand what's going on in their own and their neighbor's heart because of a star in the window. Which is why I believe that these service flags are, of all emblems, most truly the emblem of democracy. Phil has a little song fits in right here. It's called Boy of Mine. Thank you.
oft when I'm lonely, my memory swings back to your baby days. Feeling the joy that a baby brings out of God's wondrous way. Seeming to hear the first prayer that you say, longing to tuck you in bed. There's no one knows how I long for you now. Here with my arms outspread.
Say something about women's clothes. All I ever did much was pan them. And I am not going to turn into any fashion advisor. Nothing about it. But what I'm trying to get at is the government is trying to stop unnecessary waste in the purchase of clothing. They don't want you to buy a lot of things you don't need. They want you to buy stuff that will last, that's appropriate, and they want you to take care of what you have. I bet there are more clothes closets in this country that haven't been gone through and cleaned out and aired and demoiled and stuff brushed, making my own now, than a few. There's enough waste material in there to equip a small-sized army, including wax, waves, and spars, in men or women alike. Some of it's good material that with a little patching up would do for a long time. And, you know, being overdressed today is not a symbol of your prosperity as much as it's a symbol of your stupidity and your cupidity. You're fudging on the deal. The best dressed man in this country today or out of it is the man in uniform and the woman. And when you just haven't a stitch to wear, you might think about the whack, for example. When she enlists, she's given 3 skirts, 5 shirts, 1 blouse or jacket, and 2 winter uniforms. Well, a few trimmings. But not too many of those either. And that's the outfit. Take a look at them and see if you know a smarter dressed group than they in the country. They look but good. Because why? Because they take care of those clothes. Now, I can't be the sergeant that would come out and eat your ear off for having a grease spot on your uniform or your blouse or your jacket, your skirt. But you're not in line to have a sergeant do that. If you were, though, it'd last a lot longer.
You could get by on that same equipment. Easily. And practically every one of you have that much or more. Now, if you haven't, then this doesn't go for you. But for the ones of you who have, if you exercise the same care in cleaning and pressing and not waiting till it got so dirty that they practically had to ruin it in order to get it clean, but in cleaning and pressing and taking care of your clothes, you too would be one of the best-dressed women in America, and the money that you waste in excess clothing could go to buy a war bond. Well, here's Hannah and Diana, the Westonest and you.
Studying on an idea. Wonder if fashions in men in this country aren't changing. How are you gals going to have to get through used to 4Fs and guys that have put new ball bearings in their wheelchair? Think that's going to make a pretty good... Maybe I'll get around to that tomorrow. If I don't, I'm going to do it this week. Sure, you're a foot high. Well, that's about all. Thanks for listening, and good afternoon.
Tomorrow at this time, the Owens, Illinois Glass Company will present another program with Mrs. America's favorite radio visitor, Fletcher Wiley. There's a great deal of American blood being spilled on the continent of Europe. That blood, like any other vital necessity of war, must be replaced. It can only be replaced by you. The blood our boys are losing is being lost in pain and suffering. And the blood you're asked to supply to replace that loss will cost you no pain, no suffering. In fact, will cost you absolutely nothing but a couple of hours of your time. And your blood donation will lessen the suffering and in many instances will mean the difference between life and death to a fighting man at the battlefront. Call your Red Cross blood bank and make an appointment. Now, make that a must for this week. Galen Drake speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.